Expert answers to your 2015 tax questions. Tax day is fast approaching. It is a little more than a month away. Maybe you've already started your tax forms. Maybe you've stashed everything you need in an envelope that's in that pile on your countertop. Or maybe you are dreading tax day because you are just so disorganized. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Whatever your circumstance, if you have questions about this year's federal or state forms, we are here with guests who know the answers. How has the Affordable Care Act affected tax filing? How is Maine different from other states? What are some write-offs most people don't know about? What can I do this year to help my situation next year? Is it better to file online or the old-fashioned way? Maine Calling tries to take some of the stress and mystery out of tax time. But first, this news update. And from the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There are two types of people in this country, those who have already filed their taxes and those who haven't. For those of you who have already turned in your 1040s, give us a call and share your secrets to financial organization. For those of you worrying about the fast approaching April 15th deadline, you are in luck today because we have three experts on the show to answer your most vexing tax return questions. With me in our studio, Sarah Desormiers. She's a lawyer and CPA and the president and founder of Integrated Tax Consultants. Sean O'Hare is a certified tax resolution specialist with O'Hare Associates. And we welcome back David Martinez. He is a certified public accountant with Harris & Vickers. Of course, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about filing your taxes this year? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll get right to it because I have a feeling this is going to be a very busy show. Sean, why don't I start with you and ask you, what are the most common mistakes you see on tax returns?
The most common mistakes, I would say, is people not signing them, whether it's when they e-file, not signing the signature form, so they can't be submitted until they are signed, at least at our firm.
Such a simple thing.
Exactly.
Such a complicated subject. Sign your tax
returns. Sign the tax returns before you mail them in.
What about you, Sarah?
I think oftentimes people don't take all the deductions that they necessarily are able to. I think they don't think about all of the different aspects of charitable contributions, for example, like miles and non-cash contributions. I see that often.
Interesting. So you say non-cash contributions. If someone puts in volunteer time, they can write that off?
No, not volunteer time. Your time actually is just a personal contribution. But things like if you donated clothing or household goods to Goodwill or Salvation Army, if you donate a car or other goods like that, that's all deductible. And not everybody thinks about it every time they drive up to the Goodwill bin to drop something off that might be deductible.
I take the receipt, but then it gets lost in a pile in my kitchen.
You're not alone.
And David, what about you? What do you see? What are the most common mistakes to avoid?
I think the three of us probably each year work with a handful of new clients. I mean, we're always looking to grow. And I've seen this increasing pattern with my new clients of people who have not accurately planned for their estimated taxes. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people who have retired, who have shifted from that phase of having earned income, meaning a W-2. And when we have a W-2, it's actually advantageous for us tax-wise because we'll have our taxes withheld, federal and state. And now all of a sudden I've retired and my income is Social Security, pension, IRA, maybe investment income. And the challenge will become, how do I account for my taxes? And often what I need to do is I need to pay estimated taxes. So a lot of these new clients that come to our firm, they come in with estimated tax penalties. They've prepared their returns themselves. They've done a really nice job, and a lot of them have done it for many years. But it becomes a new challenge for them to have to plan their estimated taxes, whether they're going to take a distribution from an IRA and withhold taxes lock, stock, and barrel, or if they're going to work with somebody and have quarterly estimates planned.
So you would say that even if you've always done your own taxes, whenever you have a significant life change, such as retirement or I'm going to guess having a child, that might be the year
Yes.
to hire an accountant, just to sort of put you on track for this new phase in your life.
Retirement's huge. Marriage, divorce, having a child, somebody passing away, a spouse passing away, also changing geographic location. A lot of new clients come to our firm at Harrison Vickers who have moved from one state to another. You're moving from one place to another mid-year, and the state of Maine knows that, and they're looking very closely at your filing when it comes through.
Okay. Sean O'Hare, online or paper? What's the best way to do your file your taxes? Should you is there an advantage to doing it online or doing it the old-fashioned way?
I would say definitely online.
Why?
When you submit your tax return to the IRS through an e-file method, if there are any issues with it, you'll know right away. For example, we've had clients who they claim their child as a dependent, not realizing that their child who is away at college has also filed their tax return. So then you have duplicate Social Security numbers because the child at college is claiming themselves, not knowing that mom and dad really want the deduction as well. So things like that. Identity theft, which is big these days. When you e-file, you know right away if there are any problems.
So interesting.
Also, you get your refund much quicker if you're entitled to a refund.
Okay. Sarah, how does the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, affect how people file their taxes? Does it affect everybody or just those who are involved in an exchange?
Well, everyone needs to basically tell the IRS whether or not they had health insurance for the entire year. So every single tax return requires that notification on it. And so then you also have the share penalty if you did not have insurance for the entire year, and that gets calculated and paid on your 1040.
So for many people, it'll just be a question. Somebody, for example, who has an employer health care plan will just check yes and move on.
Correct. But if you have the share penalty, it's, you know, for 2015, we're looking at an increased penalty. And because on the 2014 tax return, you do have the penalty showing up for those individuals who don't have insurance for the entire year, the IRS is actually going to potentially let there to be a second enrollment period because of that sort of sticker shock that suddenly this penalty is going to show up there and people might have an opportunity to then enroll in 2015. So it's an interesting time right now.
David, let's say you've already done your taxes, but you haven't sent them in because when you did them, you didn't like the number at the bottom of the last page. Is there anything you can do at this point between now and April 15th to, I don't know, take a little bit of the pain away?
Sure. There's a couple of tricks, as we'll call them, that I like to advocate for my clients. The first one that a lot of people are missing out on is folks who are participating in an HSA health savings account. You have the opportunity to make sure that you're rounding up that contribution before the end of the year. And you want to make sure that you're clear on whether your employer's made your contributions or you have. If it's been an employer contribution, you're typically going to see it denoted in the W-2. A lot of folks don't even realize that's going on. They have never really taken money out of their own pocket. But if they haven't gone to the actual limit of what they can contribute, whether they're an individual or family, you have the opportunity to round that up. And if you're doing it yourself out of your pocket, you can take an actual dollar-for-dollar deduction on the front page of your tax return. And, you know, what I've been telling my clients, and I've actually surprised quite a few people, there's no diminishing marginal utility here. You can really look at your tax bracket that you're in, your federal and your state, and just kind of put that against what you're putting into your HSA, and that's going to be your savings. And, you know, for people who are using these monies anyway for healthcare expenses, the HSA, which is different from the FSA, the flexible spending account, it's not a use it or lose it. It carries over. It's there for you. In many instances, you can actually invest the monies in a retirement plan way, meaning mutual funds, savings accounts, certificates of deposit. And the HSA is largely becoming the new retirement savings vehicle. People above and beyond what they're doing in their IRAs and their 401ks are looking to this as the next avenue where they can start squirreling some money away.
Interesting. Sean, you know, David just said people know what they're, you know, figuring out what your tax bracket is. I think most people don't know what their tax bracket is. It's very hard to figure, and it's actually very hard often to figure out how much you should have taken out of your paycheck so that at the end of the year, there's not, you know, there's a big zero. Why is it so hard to figure out, and what kind of advice do you have for people when they're trying to figure out their deductions?
When it comes to the tax brackets, you're looking at two different tax brackets. You have your marginal tax bracket and your effective tax bracket. The way our tax system works, it's on a graduated system. So people think, oh, I'm in the 28% tax bracket. Well, that does not mean that every dollar is taxed at 28%. Where the effective tax bracket is really kind of your average tax bracket. So what you really need to be looking at is what that average tax bracket is and figuring that out to determine how much you want to have withheld from your paychecks, for example.
Is there a place we could, is there some sort of online calculator or something like that so people can figure it out?
I would just look at what your tax liability is and divide that by your adjusted gross income, which is the number on page one at the bottom of the form. That would give you a very good idea of what your average tax bracket
is. So take last year's.
Take last year. So if you're doing, if you want to figure it out for 2015, look at your 2014 tax return, what your tax liability is, divide that by your adjusted gross income, and that will give you your average tax bracket. Because you're right, Jennifer, you don't want to be having too much money sitting there. Some people look at that, I have clients that say, well, that's my oil payment for the year, or that's my vacation fund. Well, you've just really given the government an interest-free loan.
Right. Well, I know exactly. People who don't, for example, claim all their dependents so that at the end of the year they'll have a nice big check. But you all don't advocate that.
Definitely not. I think that it's behooves people to pay in as close to where their tax is going to be for the year because, again, like you said, Sean, the interest-free loan to the IRS is not where anybody really, really should be. Yeah, it's nice to get a big check back in the mail, but I'd rather have that sitting maybe in my, you know, savings account or an investment account or paying off credit cards, something where you're either earning interest or saving interest. But I think that what Sean's idea is basically if you look at last year's tax liability and you make sure that you have at least that much withheld, then you're not going to incur any penalties. And that's really where you should be sort of aiming for, is making sure that you're not going to owe anything above and beyond just your tax bill.
Okay, I want to go to the calls really quickly. But David, before that, I want to ask you, how is Maine different than other states? If someone has recently moved here from somewhere else, what should they know?
Well, it's a great place to live.
Agreed. Tax-wise.
You know, we've got a few things for the whole run of the economic spectrum. The first thing that has been really nice to learn about has been what's known as the Property Tax Fairness Credit. Mm. Individuals have the opportunity to get a credit on their tax return, depending upon their filing status, of either $300 or $600 or somewhere in between. One thing that's different about this, we used to have what was called a circuit breaker program. Mm-hmm. You actually have to file a tax return to take advantage of this. And it's a really important point because a lot of people that might have this as an opportunity may not have to otherwise file a tax return. They may not have sufficient income to support that. On the other side of the spectrum and the less attractive side of the spectrum, the state of Maine doesn't give you the same credit for your itemized deductions that you might get at the federal level, presuming that you are itemizing. There are some limitations in place. The number has changed from last year to this year. Last year was the first year, but what you want to start thinking about, particularly when you're dealing with your estimated tax planning, as Sean and Sarah talked about, is if I've made all these charitable contributions and I'm getting a federal benefit, am I getting the same benefit at the state level? Mm-hmm. And if you cross a certain threshold, the answer may be no. Yeah. Maybe I'm a retired person who gets substantial federal benefit from my medical expenses, my long-term care living expenses, but the state of Maine may not give me that same benefit. And that's changed, and that piece is different on the medical expense side, but last year that was not the case.
Okay, so we'll start with the questions from the audience. This is from Lynn, an email that came in before the program. Hi there. My question is about the new health insurance form, 8965 Part 3. My employer offers health coverage, but their annual enrollment period is in June for coverage beginning in July. So last year I signed up for the marketplace before the deadline and obtained my coverage there for May and June. I then signed up in June for coverage from my employer for the rest of the year. I understand I can use exemption code G for January, February, March, and April, but how do I show that I had coverage from my employer for July through December? I did not receive a Form 1095A from my employer.
Jennifer, my understanding is that you're on the honor system here to indicate whether you have or have not had coverage. And frankly, this is new for all of us.
Right.
I've but had a few clients where this has come forward, and one of them actually was an individual who did not have full year coverage. And what we wound up doing is we actually go through and we fill out the form and you check the boxes and you make that indication. So what I would advocate to Lynn is make sure you keep very close records. It sounds like she's done what she needs to do, and make sure she coordinates with her human resource department that what she's seeing is exactly what has happened, and that when she's actually filling out her forms, that's what is coming across.
Okay. I think we have time for one call before our first break, so we'll go to Judy calling from Franklin County. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to know, I got a small inheritance, and I'm getting another one this year. I got it last year, and I'm getting another one this year. And the one says it is taxable. It's not. It's just a few thousand dollars. It's not anything to, you know, to kick in the estate tax. And the other one says, no, it's not. It's not part of your income that you have to.
So you want to know if you have to report the income from your inheritance. Sean.
Judy, if the inheritance is a bequest from the will, for example, that would not be taxable. However, you need to not confuse inheritance with income that is coming from the estate. Sometimes income coming from an estate would be taxable to you. But if in the will, for example, they said you're entitled to $1,000 and you received a check for $1,000, that would not be a taxable event.
Is that, was that the case for you, Judy?
No. It's, in the will, it said I got a quarter of the estate.
It, did it then go into a trust? I think, you know,
I
are you...
I have no idea.
So I what did you get that says that it's taxable? I mean, I guess I don't understand exactly what...
The legal, the lawyers that sent it to me asked me for a 1099.
Yeah.
I mean, a W-9, but I never got a 1099.
Yeah, so they're, what they're going to do is they're going to probably file a trust return, and then you'll get a Form K-1 that will tell you exactly how much is taxable. That's
well,
what I would imagine.
I never got that, and it's getting close to tax time.
That doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of information gathering that needs to happen on that level, mm-hmm. and they're getting information from investment firms just like we were getting, and you were, you know, other people are getting 1099s from these brokerage houses, and things got delayed because of extensions. So I'm not particularly surprised you haven't received something, but I would keep an eye on the mail.
Should she be worried?
I would not be worried at this point. What I would do is either you can file for an extension that would give you until October 15th, or you can file your 1040 the way it stands now. When you receive the K-1, you can file an amended return at that point.
Yep.
Okay.
I concur.
Judy, thanks for your call, and we'll take some more calls after we take a short break. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Casella. Committed to effectively managing non-recyclable waste while protecting the environment. Casella, giving resources new life. And The Clean Bedroom, helping create eco-friendly sleep environments. 477 4th Street in Portland and in Kittery at Dan's Crossing. TheCleanBedroom.com.
Wherever you spend your morning, NPR's Morning Edition is there with you. Wherever the story takes place, NPR's Morning Edition connects it with you.
Dallas. Des Moines. Topeka.
Montana. You will own your morning when you spend tomorrow with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Look, when I was still on the job back in Philly, we had this case.
On the next Fresh Air, Jonathan Banks, who played a private eye slash fixer in Breaking Bad. He reprises the role in the prequel Better Call Saul. And we talk with the show's co-creator and writer, Peter Gould. Join us.
That's Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Tax Help. With me in our studio, David Martinez. He's a certified public accountant with Harris and Vickers. Sarah DeSormiers is president and founder of Integrated Tax Consultants. Sean O'Hare is a certified tax resolution specialist with O'Hare Associates. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page, going to Eric in Augusta. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just calling to give kind of a quick reminder about, you know, you've discussed it a little bit, but some of the additional things individuals will have to report on or do at tax time this year when it comes to their health insurance coverage. Like you talked about a little before, people do have to report on whether or not they had health coverage throughout the year. And for most people, that's just going to mean checking a box on their 1040 if they had coverage through an employer or through MaineCare or through another source. However, for those individuals who did have marketplace coverage through healthcare.gov, they are going to receive a Form 1095A in the mail. It's really important for those individuals to know that there were some incorrect 1095s that were sent out. About 20% of them had some incorrect amounts listed on the forms. And if somebody thinks that their 1095 might be incorrect, they should contact healthcare.gov directly, and they can get their updated 1095A. And if they've already filed, luckily this year, they do not need to refile. If they did have an incorrect 1095A, the IRS is going to take care of that.
Okay. And Eric, you're with an organization that helps folks with these, right?
We are, yeah. We're Consumer for Affordable Healthcare. We do have a toll-free helpline at 1-800-965-7476. So a lot of times, you know, individuals are calling us with questions about some of the additional tax forms they're getting this year. You know, we're not tax professionals, but, you know, we are able to front load some information about, you know, some of the healthcare-related
okay.
information that individuals are getting.
Eric, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to go to Emily in Cherryfield. Hi, Emily. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I want to go back to health savings accounts, which were just discussed. And
Emily, can you speak up a little bit, please?
Yeah, I have a call. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
We're talking about the HSA, which was just discussed, and we pay taxes entirely by estimated taxes or deductions for IRA withdrawals. Can someone like us set up an HSA? And I want to say in advance that we only use the standard deduction. Would we then get some kind of a credit? And also would like to know what items could go into this health savings account, and or if it's, say, for example, a percentage of gross income.
Hi, Emily. It's David. I was the one who made the comments earlier about the HSA. And the key is you actually have to have access to what's called a high deductible mm-hmm. health plan. So what you need to determine is, with regards to the health insurance that you do have, if you have access to that, you can't just run out and open an HSA account. But if you do have access, then it is something that's available to you. And then within that, you have to make the further determination whether or not you're going to have an individual or a family plan. For 2014, if you had an individual plan, the max contribution is $3,300, for an individual plan, $3,300, with a family plan, $6,550. So what you can do there is you can put your monies in. If you're doing it out of your own pocket, again, it is a dollar-for-dollar deduction on the front page of your tax return. So it's highly effective.
Yeah. With an HSA, again, to repeat, you have to make sure that your insurance coverage allows for it. And it has it's deductible irregardless if you take the standard or itemized deduction.
All right. And Emily, does that answer your question?
Well, I think if they're saying that you're not qualified if you have Medicare and a plan that takes up a supplemental for Medicare, including Part D, that does not make us eligible then to set up an HSA.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. The key component, Emily, is having a high deductible plan.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Emily. We have an email from Thorndike. Is there a general rule for when Social Security benefits for senior citizens are taxable, especially at the lower end of the financial spectrum?
Taxability of Social Security benefits is really based on your other income that you might have. If your only income is Social Security, then it's not going to be taxable. But if you have investments, even tax-free investments, you need to look at all the other sources of income, and then the determination is based on that.
Okay. Going to Steve in Bangor. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to follow up on a prior caller that called a couple calls back about the error in the 1095A that was sent out. Those of us that filed very early, evidently this error was not picked up on, and I don't even know if it affects me yet, but I filled out my tax return very early and then subsequently did some FAFSAs and different things for college applications, which were based on this tax return. Maybe your panel could tell me what might be the repercussions, both on the tax return and with the subsequent documents that went to different colleges and as such.
Steve, my understanding is that with these incorrect 1095As that went out, the IRS is not requiring you to amend the tax return, that they will take the information, your tax return, based on the information that was originally reported. So as far as I know, there is nothing you need to do at this point.
And FAFSA, generally, this is Sarah over at Integrated Tax Consultants. So generally, FAFSA looks at your gross income, adjusted gross income, your taxable income, those lines, and any penalties if you failed to have coverage for 2014, that's not going to impact those lines. So you should be all set as far as FAFSA goes.
Okay, so there's probably no follow-up that I need to do then?
Sounds like from that the gentleman who called in that the IRS is going to try and take care of this for everybody in 2014.
And so, his organization was Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. So maybe, Steve, if you still have questions, that would be a great place to turn. Thanks for your call. I'm going to go to Rebecca in Bucksport. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. My question may have already been answered, but I only received Social Security last year, and it was under $20,000. Do I need to pay state taxes? I know I don't have to pay federal.
Rebecca, this is Sean. No, Social Security benefits in the state of Maine are not taxable. So
that's great to hear.
I think you're all set.
There we go. Okay, and headed to Connie in Vassalboro. Hi, Connie. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was just calling to make sure that people understood that there is a new special enrollment period coming out from March 15th to April 30th. For people that were uninsured last year, and when they're doing their taxes this year, they have to pay a penalty for being uninsured. They can definitely get this new special enrollment period that's opening up and get coverage this year if they choose to.
Yep, that's sticker shock. I think the IRS is afraid people didn't really realize the impact in January during the enrollment period, January and February.
And the penalties are just going up. So
exactly.
So, Connie, thanks for your call and your tip. Sarah, I know that you work with a lot of small businesses. Maine is full of small businesses. And what has changed this year for people who own a small business and perhaps are sole proprietors?
So a couple of interesting things. And the big change for 2014 is the IRS back in October of 2013 basically issued new regulations related to fixed assets. If you are a small business that has fixed assets in your company, materials and supplies, repairs and maintenance, all those kinds of costs related generally with fixed assets, then there are new regulations that came out, and 2014 is a really great year because part of those regulations allow for if you had buildings or other fixed assets that you replace, let's say, part of that infrastructure, like a roof or something like that, you can go back and do a partial disposition, which allows you to write off the cost of roof or siding or other aspects of that infrastructure for prior years. So if you bought the building in 08, you write it off in 20, you know, you replace the roof in 2010, you can go back and write off that part of that building you bought in 08. So it's really cool. Plus, the IRS issued de minimis rules. So if you have costs under $500 that normally you might need to capitalize and then expense over years, you can write that off now if you make the election.
All right. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to head to Sandy in Hudson. Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm one of those small business owners, and most of my husband's and my income is self-employment. And I got a letter from the marketplace this year saying that I needed to provide some proof of my income, including a self-employment ledger that, honestly, I've never heard of in all the years I've been doing business. And I was wondering, can I just send them a copy of my 2014 tax return?
Sandy, this is Sean. I would definitely send them a copy of your if it's a Schedule C, I would send them a copy of your Schedule C. If you're incorporated, send them a copy of your tax return. That should be sufficient. I've never heard of the ledger that you referred to either.
Well, good. I'm glad that the professionals are with me on that. Could I ask just a quick follow-up question?
Sure.
They've been threatening me and saying, you know, you have 60 days, and then they said you have 30 days, and that time frame has already gone by. Are they actually going to try to take away my health insurance?
That I'm not sure of, but I highly doubt it. Since they want everybody to have health insurance, why would they take it away?
Well, that was kind of my feeling, and honestly, that's why I blew them off.
Well, I don't recommend blowing off the government, but I think if you send in whatever they're requesting now, even if it's late, it's better than nothing.
I'm working on it right now. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Sandy. We have a tweet. I married in 2013, but didn't change my name until mid-2014. Will I still be able to do everything online this year?
That's really going to depend on what name is with the Social Security Administration. If you change your name mid-2014 and it's December 31st, you're taking your married name, I would file it with your married name, and you can still do everything online.
Boy, our questions that I think some would be stumpers, but you guys have the answers. we're going to go to Farmington and Ann. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. I received 1099 that includes reimbursement for mileage, and I wondered what the best way was to treat that. I'd been told that it's better to not ask for the reimbursement and just take it as a deduction on the tax return to reduce the taxable income.
I wouldn't generalize and say that it's definitely better to do it. You may or may not get the benefit of the mileage deduction. It's an unreimbursed business expense, so you'd really want to look at your particular circumstance. I think businesses would probably prefer you do it that way because it streamlines their record keeping. And I've worked with a few business clients where it's creating this ease for them to just ask their employees to take the mileage reimbursement. But I'm not so sure that I would agree completely across the board that it's better for you to do it that way.
Does it depend on the amount of overall income then?
Yes.
Because of the tax bracket issues?
Not because of the tax bracket, because as you're pointing out, your adjusted gross income, when we're talking about unreimbursed business expenses, it's a miscellaneous deduction. There's what's called a 2% floor. So what you need to have are sufficient deductions that exceed 2% of your adjusted gross income to actually benefit from it.
But my income would show to be higher than it is because a substantial amount might be the expenses.
It would be.
Well, I mean, two questions come to mind as follow-ups. You mentioned this was a 1099. So are you a subcontractor?
Self-employed.
Yes. So as a self-employed individual, you can take off of, so you actually are reporting this on a Schedule C most likely, and you can take a deduction for your mileage that offsets that income. But a follow-up question would be, is the mileage that you get reimbursed, is the rate, does it fluctuate from year to year? Do they use the IRS rate?
The rate is less than the federal rate.
Mm. Yeah. So what?
Like by 11 cents a mile.
Yep. Mm. So what happened in that case is you're picking up an income, the miles times this lower rate, but then you can offset that on your Schedule C with your miles times the federal rate. So you actually are getting more of a deduction than you're picking up in income. So you should go ahead and take the reimbursement because you're getting cash in hand, and then you can reduce your income dollar for dollar by the mileage rate set up by the IRS.
All right. Okay.
There you go. Some good news, Ann. And the phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We have to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions for our tax experts. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Portland Ovations, presenting Bass Track, Stories About War and Humanity, March 26th, Westbrook Performing Arts Center, portlandovations.org.
The modern age brings with it an old-fashioned dilemma.
Any technology can be used for good or bad, and you know, you want to make sure you're on the right side of that and you're using them for great applications.
Well, yes. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Drones are coming, like it or not. The story next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Join us this evening at 6:30. All this week, during our 1 o'clock public affairs programming hour, Speaking in Maine will take us to the recently concluded Camden Conference. The conference topic this year was Russia Resurgent. We'll hear five diverse talks all week on this topic, from Russian history to Vladimir Putin to the Ukraine to challenges for both Europe and the United States. Speaking in Maine and this year's Camden Conference, Russia Resurgent. That's all this week at 1 o'clock. These programs will also be archived on mpbn.net. Click on demand, along with all past Speaking in Maine programs, and also at camdenconference.org.
Talk about it. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, getting ready for tax day. With me in our studio, Sean O'Hare. He is a certified tax resolution specialist with O'Hare Associates. David Martinez is a certified public accountant with Harris and Vickers. And Sarah Desormiers is president and founder of Integrated Tax Consultants. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. A question, an email question from Jack in Fairfield. He asks, I am doing my father's taxes as he died last year. Do I have to file twice, once for him and once for the estate?
That's a question that comes up a lot. We do deal a lot with estates, and it's really going to depend. More than likely, though, you're going to have a final 1040 with an estate tax return. But you really need to look at what the income is as well.
Okay, and an email from Deborah. Do your guests have any tips on how to avoid or reduce the AMT, the alternative minimum tax?
In Maine, AMT is usually triggered by the amount of state income tax that you pay. And because we live in Maine, we pay a lot of state income taxes. As far as minimizing that, it's really going to take some planning to do that. There's no simple answer to that question.
Don't make as much money.
Yeah, agreed. You know, what I've seen a few times, in addition to the state tax, and, this is a small subset of the population, there's a lot of executive compensation issues, incentive stock options, and you can often time the triggering of some of these things, and a lot of them play right into AMT. So if that's who you are, getting strategic with how you're recognizing your executive comp can make a difference on AMT.
You also may want to look at whether you're claiming the income tax as an itemized deduction or the sales tax deduction. You can claim both. For example, in New Hampshire, they claim the sales tax because they don't pay state income taxes. Sales tax will not trigger the AMT. Those are things to look at.
Okay. Going to go to Jimmy in Orono. Hi, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have a child who's 18 years old, freshman in college, and she received some scholarships, and I'm wondering if I have a choice as to whether they can be considered taxable or non-taxable. It seems that the default is non-taxable, but I'm wondering, is there a way that I can make them taxable, perhaps so that I can contribute to a Roth IRA for her, or also to maximize the American Opportunity Credit, Lifetime Learning Credit, other tax credits? Because I think that these scholarships would fall below the threshold for taxable income. So if we declare them as income, she doesn't pay taxes on them, and meanwhile we can take advantage of other credits and possibly contribute to an IRA. Thank you.
I'm not aware of how you can make a scholarship taxable, and even if you could, you wouldn't be able to contribute to a Roth IRA because I don't think it would be considered earned income.
I've seen grants. I agree with you, Sean. We'll term them scholarships, but a workplace grant, which I think would be taxable, and a lot of times on the forms that come through, it's just labeled as a scholarship. But we could perhaps make the case that that is earned income and make a retirement plan contribution. But otherwise, I completely agree, Jimmy. If it's not earned income, there's no Roth contribution or other type of retirement contribution available.
Well, and generally scholarships, the amount that you use has to be for the education and books and lab fees and those kinds of things. And whatever, most scholarships, and maybe this isn't the case here, whatever you don't use for those uses has to be returned to the school or returned to whomever issued that scholarship. And that's not taxable, those uses, things like books, fees, tuition.
Okay, thank you, Jimmy. A comment via email from Allison in Portland. She says, Every Maine taxpayer can check the Clean Elections box on line one of the Maine 1040. Checking the box does not add anything to the tax bill or reduce the refund, but it does send $3 into the Maine Clean Election Fund. This is a small and easy thing to do, but it sends a big message that Mainers want clean elections and a government of, by, and for people. Interesting comment. I think a lot of people don't know that they're not paying that $3. So
that's correct.
Yeah. And Susan writes from South Tamworth, New Hampshire. I found that the solution to late K-1 statements was requesting to receive them electronically, which saves a great deal of time. So thank you for that comment, Susan. Going to Constance in Portland. Hi, Constance. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to let your listeners know I've received over the last month or so a number of calls from someone purporting to be from the IRS and saying that I owe money and I'm in big trouble and I have to call a certain number. And I just wanted to let everyone know that if there's any business related to your taxes, it comes in the mail and does not come by phone.
That correct. Is correct.
That's a very good point. Also, point out, the IRS does not email either. So if you get an email from the IRS, it's phony.
Yeah, everything comes in the mail, and do not give anybody any information over the phone.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Constance. And on a related note, we have a post from Heather on our Facebook page. If you file online and they return it, saying you've already filed, what do you do? She's wondering if it's identity theft.
Most likely.
It very well could be identity theft. Don't want to jump to any conclusions, but the IRS has a division for dealing specifically with identity theft. So if you do think your identity has been compromised, I would reach out to them. Going forward, they can give you a specific PIN that you would use to file. Wouldn't help you with 2014, but going forward it would.
It's also recommended that you report it to your local police department because in addition to a fraudulent tax return, somebody may be using your identity to do other less than desirable things. So getting a record with your local police department makes a whole lot of sense.
Okay. A question from Bruce in Camden. His question is about the ACA. I had health coverage through it during 2014, and my premium was based on my 2013 income. However, my 2014 income ended up being substantially higher. Will I have to pay back perhaps several thousand dollars?
Yes, you're going to have to reimburse some of the credit if you got any subsidy for your insurance through the exchanges. So, you know, you need to probably either talk to somebody who's an expert in these things like us, or you should be very careful when you're going through the process of filling out your tax return on whatever software you use to make sure that you fill out that form correctly.
Okay. Going to Rendon in Newcastle. Hi, Rendon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. My question is similar to the question prior about...
Rendon, can you speak up a little bit, please?
My question is similar to the call prior about employee reimbursement for travel. I'm an employee, and I get gas, and I get $125 a month stipend for my car. Is there any way I could do anything better than that with my taxes?
So typically, hi, Rendon, this is Sarah. So typically what happens is that's not going to be includable in your income because oftentimes, yeah, you know the rules.
Well, I get $125.
Yep.
That's an income. I'm claimed as an income on that.
So the question I would have for you is, do you keep track of the miles that you're driving in order to sort of substantiate that?
Correct.
Yeah.
My gas card, you know, that they provide.
Yeah.
That is tracked. But I just didn't know if I was entitled to a reimbursement of some or tax write-off.
Perhaps. We talked earlier about being able to write off on, Dave had mentioned, as a miscellaneous deduction, you can write off some of your miles related to your employment.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot take a deduction for miles that you drive that are considered commuting, and that would be from your house to your business. But anything that you do basically from your business out into the greater world, it becomes a deductible mile. And sometimes, especially with the gas prices dropping as low as they have in the last few months, 8 months or so, there could be a potential for a tax deduction there. Like Dave mentioned, there are some rules that limit the amount of the number of dollars that you can write off, and you have to be itemizing your deductions. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting $125 as a reimbursement,
plus free gas.
Plus free gas. Well, then, if you're getting gas as well as a reimbursement, then you're probably not going to get any benefit because the odds are pretty slim that there's going to be anything.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what the expense on a vehicle could be or not, but all right.
Yep, sorry.
Well, thanks for the call. We have an email from Scott. He says, is there a resource available to help determine the required annual distribution from an inherited IRA, and if somebody wants to even explain what the question he's asking means.
The first question, is there a resource available? Yes, and I would generally say that I lean heavily on IRS.gov. I think there's a tremendous amount of information available there. There's going to be an actuarial table that I think that this gentleman's going to want to look up. But as far as what he's discussing, a required minimum distribution, and it depends upon the circumstance. I think you said he inherited it from a decedent. There's certain rules in place there, but I think the more particular instance which we see are, you know, people who reach a certain age, 70 and a half, have to begin taking a required minimum distribution from their individual retirement accounts, and they actually go about and calculate that. And what the IRS can help you with on their webpage is the calculation. There's a divisor, which is a reflection of your age. You take that as your divisor against the 1231 value of your investable assets the year before, and that calculates your RMD, required minimum distribution.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you all sort of a big question. How do you avoid being audited? Any thoughts, Sean?
As far as being audited, you can't really avoid it. I should point out, less than 1% of the population, though, is being audited. A lot of people will not claim certain deductions. For example, if they're self-employed and they have a home office deduction, they think that if they claim a home office deduction, that is going to send up the red flags, which will lead to an audit. My feeling on being audited, if you have done your tax return correctly, you shouldn't be afraid of an audit.
Okay. Sarah?
So two interesting points related to this issue. One, don't give your tax preparers round numbers. Those never look good. You know, if you're keeping documentation for, like we've talked about in earlier calls, mileage, business expenses, those kinds of things, actually give those numbers and calculate those numbers, and don't just give an estimate, because round numbers are, going back to Sean's point, those are red flags. Mm. But another thing to think about is it's not a red flag to extend. So if maybe we were talking earlier about K-1s or 1099s, if documentation hasn't come in yet, it isn't a red flag to extend. And actually, it can be of benefit when it comes to extending statutes of limitations, or if you have a retirement plan that's you could call this self-employed 401k, you can extend the period of time to fund it. So there can be benefits to extending.
And David, do you have any thoughts?
There is a school of thought that electronically filing your tax return could actually increase your likelihood of being audited. The reason is because the e-file actually allows the IRS to more efficiently match your 1099 items with what actually happened. If you have something that's involved, a Schedule C as a sole proprietor, again, the school of thought suggests that paper filing makes it less likely you'd be audited, because it really requires at that point that the agents have to roll up their sleeves and check the numbers.
Hmm. And with about a minute left, what is your advice for next year? What should you be doing next year to put yourself in a better, or this year to put yourself in a better position for next year?
I think I'm going to steal David's answer and say, make sure you pay your estimated tax payments if you're required to make them, so that next come 2016, you're not faced with a big tax bill.
If you are of a charitable mindset, the main limitations on the Schedule A are sort of fading away, and so you can take advantage of those charitable donations for both federal and Maine.
And I'll keep on the train of thought of avoiding the audit. Work on your record keeping. Mm-hmm. You know, as Sean said, if you've prepared an accurate return, you shouldn't be afraid to be audited, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have a well-papered file. Have good items in place. maybe this is the year that you actually do it and you actually keep really good information. And you know what? That's going to make your life easier next year because now all of a sudden you've got a platform in place to file your returns more efficiently.
And just a plug, there are some great apps out there for mileage and charitable donations and everything else. So check out, if you have a smartphone, check out some apps because there are some great ones out there.
One final thought, do some tax planning. Meet with your tax advisor before the end of the year.
A good plug.
And plan.
plan. You know,
proactive
no matter
planning.
What our topic is on Maine Calling, that seems to be a word that comes up a lot. Plan. We should all be planning. Thank you all so much for being here today. Sarah Desormiers is president and founder of Integrated Tax Consultants. David Martinez is a certified public accountant with Harris and Vickers. Sean O'Hare is a certified tax resolution specialist with O'Hare Associates. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, assessing the winter damage to your home and what to do about it. Join us for tips on surveying the damage that the long, hard winter may have caused. Learn what you can do to remedy yourself and when to turn to professionals. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Darling's Audi, dedicated to offering exquisite automotive design with the 2015 A6 and A4 Quattro. DarlingsAudi.com.